today on a special Rambling About Cars, the 2022 MotorOne.com Star Awards have dropped. They are out. We're going to tell you all about the winners, some of the competitors, and we're going to have some inside stories because we have some very special guests here who were driving these cars for a week in California. So without further ado, it's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, and Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way, who's trying to mess me up with doing a little pre-show antics here. I appreciate that.
No, my finger literally slipped. I clicked on one thing and it slipped down the trackpad and it clicked on another thing. And I'm hoping our editor takes care of that for me and doesn't make me look like an idiot. But if he does,
I'm really hoping he doesn't, but to be honest, because it fits with the program. It kind of does. Because our guests are frequently on the Motor One Happy Hour every Fridays.
Segue, man. I had to double check
the time. I thought I was on the wrong podcast.
And the wrong day.
Yeah.
Wait, it's Friday? Sweet.
But we have Brett T. Evans and Jeff Perez. Both of them are editors here at MotorOne.com. And they, in the first week of November, right? First week. Yes? Yes.
First week?
Yeah.
They traveled out to California. Some of them that travel was longer than others. And they drove a bunch of cars for the MotorOne.com Star Awards, our second annual competition to figure out the best cars in a variety of categories. And we're going to talk about them today. If you've been looking at MotorOne.com this week, we have been publishing a couple, generally two a day, I believe, right?
Yeah. Two winners a day.
Yeah.
And they're all out as you're listening to this on Friday.
Exactly. As of this post, they will all be out. But we are going to talk about how these guys decided it. We're going to talk about the competitors in each class and then how they arrived to each one. So yeah, let's have some fun. Brett, Jeff, do you guys have anything to add before we get into the competitors?
Yeah, just give us a little bit of background here on the craziness before we get into more craziness.
Well, this is our second year doing this. Yep. And I think we learned a lot in the first year, kind of figuring things out, running and gunning. And I think we all did like a million things in the first year. This year was a little more kind of evened out. We had a real photographer there that we hired, Logan Zilmer, who's great. He did a lot of stuff for us. So it was a little less chaotic. But it was still, you know, a week of a lot of driving, a lot of discussing what we drove and trying to figure out what was the best cars. So.
And we had a sponsor this year, right? A special sponsor that came on board for the Star Awards.
Yeah,
we happened with E-Range EV tires, which was really good of them. And we're really excited to actually get behind the wheel of a car with some E-Range EV tires and actually see, because they say that it's supposed to increase the range of your electric vehicle by having low rolling resistance without sacrificing grip. So definitely interested in actually getting behind the wheel and seeing how those tires actually do perform in real world circumstances.
Sure. And that's a big deal in the EV world because, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, okay, if you're going with a nice low rolling, low resistance tire, usually sacrificing a little bit of grip, a little bit of tread. So I can't wait to see how that pans out. Of course, we'll have a link to their website in this Motor One podcast post and on our YouTube channel, Motor One Podcasts. Thank you for joining us on that one, E-Range EV tires. Now, let's talk about some cars because
let's talk about some trucks first because we're going to go in the order that they have published on the site. So we're going to go in those category orders. So very first one is our best truck category. And just so I can remind the folks at home, the contestants in that category were the GMC Hummer EV, the Ford F-150 Lightning, the Ford Maverick Hybrid, and the Toyota Tundra Hybrid. And the Lightning happened to be the winner there. So
the F-150 Lightning. And I know just from sharing it around from some of my friends, I've already had a little bit of feedback about, but I think there is a very, very good reason this is deserving of the title. Why don't you two tell us about the process of how you arrived, okay, F-150 Lightning, all electric truck, best truck in the category.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, so all the trucks that are here, and I guess all the cars that are here for Star Wars, we rated throughout the year when we reviewed them. So we narrowed it down to whatever, four or five or six, depending on the segment, vehicles, right, and based on how we scored them throughout the year. And then, you know, we put them side by side. This one was an interesting one because I think the trucks was one of our smallest categories just based on what was out there. Mm-hmm. And it was also the first time we had an electric truck. I know this is only our second year, but this is the first time we had any electric truck to test, mm-hmm, between the Lightning and the Hummer. So it was interesting to drive those back to back and then drive the Maverick and the Tundra with more traditional, you know, gas engines. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting group to get out on the road.
And I think it's real quick, just to interrupt before we get into things, it's worth mentioning all of those are electrified vehicles. The GMC and the Ford Lightning are both EVs. The Maverick and the Tundra are both hybrids. So mm-hmm, yeah, all of them have some form of electrification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we've reached that phase in the industry where if it's not electrified, it will be soon, and it will be going full EV soon. So I don't know if Jeff agrees with this, but it also wasn't really much of an argument when we sat down to vote which truck we liked the best for this category. It really kind of came down to the Lightning does all the truck stuff that we need a truck to do. You know, it had a really high payload, really high towing ratings. It's got Pro Power on board, which was a huge help when we were out, you know, shooting video and stuff like that and keeping stuff charged at the track. And then it just was a good driving experience. It has a really comfortable ride, tons of power, tons of torque. And then it feels very familiar. It just kind of was like, oh, this is just an F-150 that happens to have a zero emissions power plant. And it kind of just coasted into the award without a whole lot of competition. Obviously there was competition, but this was really kind of a fairly easy decision.
Yeah. Now, I think after we drove them all, I think it really came down to the two Ford products over the other two. So the Maverick was pretty high up there too. But to Brett's point, I mean, the Lightning is just an F-150 with a battery pack and electric motors, right? Like, it doesn't feel so unfamiliar like the Hummer did. The Hummer was like a spaceship, like $100,000 toy that I think a slim majority of people are going to actually enjoy. Or I don't know, they'll enjoy it, but it's a totally different like truck. It's not a mm-hmm. it's not an F-150. It's a super truck. So yeah, it came down to the F-150 and the Maverick, and I think it was pretty obvious after a while that the Lightning was the one.
Now let me ask a quick question here, and I agree with you both. And I haven't even driven it. I think it's a fantastic truck, but I know people are going to be saying, well, what about range? The range really takes a hit when you tow. The range really takes a hit in the cold. Whether that's actually the case or not isn't really the point. That's what people are saying, and they're saying, well, because of that, you can't use it as a truck. Was range ever kind of discussed or brought up in this? Or, I mean, were your findings were just that this thing is getting it done, man? I mean, range wise, it's just getting it done.
That's kind of how I felt. You know, it didn't really seem like it was holding us back a ton in terms of doing what we needed it to do. You know, we weren't just joyriding these things. We were taking them to dinner. We were running errands. We had to make some supply runs down to Walmart a few times during the week, and we were using them like normal vehicles. And I don't really think that the F-150 held us back because it was a fully electric vehicle. I don't really think it was too much of a problem. It doesn't have as fast of a charge rate as the Hummer, you know, for example. So like, you do spend a little bit more time at the charging station if you're using a public network. But, mm-hmm. you know, other than that, I didn't really think it was holding us back too much.
Yeah, we've gotten some comments, especially on Instagram and some of the social media about the towing specifically. And the one thing that we specified, I think it's in our story, is that we didn't test any towing for these trucks just because it was a matter of, you know, time and capability of just the, you know, five of us that were there. So maybe in the future we'll do an actual towing test with the Lightning and a bunch of other trucks, but just based on specs alone, it's still a great towing truck, and it still does everything you want it to do as far as, you know, normal gas powered trucks go. So,
well, and the reality is, you know, this is a philosophical conversation, but the reality is people who buy half ton trucks for towing are not always towing 10,000 pound loads, 500 miles.
That's what I was going to say.
They're towing a boat to the lake. And even if you don't have as much range, you can still get to the lake. You can still get home from the lake. You know, it's not necessarily they're not necessarily being used as a cross country hauler. So
right,
and that's the point that I was about to make. I don't know what the demographics are, but I mean, I just know from my personal experience with people that I know, friends, family with the half ton trucks, they're not really towing much at all. And when they do, they're not taking a big horse trailer 3 or 4 hours away. So not to say that people out there aren't doing it, but this, for its purposes as a truck with the bed, with the space for people in the back. Yeah. I think that's what a vast majority of F-150 buyers are using their truck for, gas engine or otherwise.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, I have a question for you. You said that it kind of, at least in your mind, it came down to the Lightning and the Maverick. You referred to the GMC Hummer as, you know, kind of a toy. What about the Tundra? You know, you didn't really talk a whole lot about that. What in your mind, what were its advantages in this test, and what were its disadvantages that you know, why didn't it win as well?
Yeah, the Tundra is interesting. So I drove that and scored that initially during the year. And I think Brett also did a full star review on that. So him and I were both kind of like on Team Tundra going into it a little bit. Like, it was kind of a fun underdog because the Lightning definitely got a lot of accolades throughout the year, and the Maverick and the Hummer or whatever. Everybody's talking about those trucks. The engine on the powertrain on that truck is phenomenal. That V6 with the hybrid is amazing. Like, that's easily one of the best, I think, gas powertrains out there on any truck, in my opinion. The drive was great. The one we had was the TRD Pro, so it was the fully off-road capable truck. I think for me, what it came down to was the Lightning felt like the next evolution of what a truck can be, whereas the Tundra felt like an evolution of the Tundra, right? It's still like a step sort of behind the F-150 or even the Hummer in certain respects.
Interesting.
And not just based on the electric powertrain. It was just missing some things that I think in the future it's going to need to sort of evolve and adopt to become a decent competitor to Lightning and these future trucks. So.
No, that's a very interesting point. And of course, there's the Silverado EV. There's the GMC that's coming out. Ram Revolution, the concept, will be debuting early January, just a few weeks from now. So, I mean, it's not like this trend is stagnant or going backwards. So, very, very insightful, especially on the Tundra. Very insightful there. I mean, any closing thoughts on the Lightning before we move on to the next category?
Should we maybe tell people that the Rivian was not included, even though we asked for one? Not that we didn't include it on purpose, because I think a lot of people asked.
We mentioned it during the other podcast when we talked about the candidates, but it's, you know, people sometimes maybe they didn't listen to that. Yep. Maybe they'll listen to this one. So please go ahead.
Yeah, that's very good. Point that out.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, we asked Rivian for an R1T, and I think they, as a whole, as a company, I mean, I don't want to speak for them as a company, but they didn't do a lot of awards, like allow people to do a lot of awards testing with their products in first year. I know they're trying to do deliveries and stuff like that. So we totally understand. We would have loved to have it out there. I think it would have been really interesting, especially against Lightning and Hummer. But maybe next year we'll get the SUV out for awards testing.
Because it was one of our highest rated vehicles this year as well. So it obviously would have been included. You know, maybe sometime we'll get a chance to line these two trucks up side by side in a separate comparison test. And if so, then, you know, that will certainly be a lot of fun, but wasn't excluded on purpose.
Yeah.
I like Jeff's drag race idea, by the way.
Yep. I'm in.
So let's move on. This is our best SUV category, and I'm going to go through all the contestants in that. That was the Land Rover Range Rover, the Genesis GV70, the BMW iX, the Kia Sportage, the Infiniti QX60, the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, and the Subaru Forester Wilderness. And winner in that category was the Sportage.
Kia Sportage.
That's right. I'm going to pull those pictures up, but if you guys could talk about that for just a second while I'm doing that, I would appreciate it.
Very interesting choice. And I don't know about Bruce, but I wasn't in the know on all of these here before we're posting them this week. So I was surprised in a good way and impressed, because I know Kia, they've just come such a, feels like they've come such a long way in a fairly short time. And of course, we're talking about a category that has quite a range. I mean, okay, BMW iX, Infiniti QX60, those are pretty luxurious. Of course, the GV70 is luxurious. And then you have CRV, the Subaru Forester Wilderness, a little more on the kind of the rugged side, Jeep Grand Wagoneer.
And I apologize. My window is out of the way. Also, Honda CRV. I apologize. I forgot that one.
Oh, I thought you said it. Anyway, well,
did I?
I don't know. I'm just going to say that you said it.
Anyway,
it wasn't a mistake if you don't acknowledge it, right?
All right.
But I mean, it's such an eclectic mix. How do you start trying to narrow that down? Because there are so many different genres in, you know, subgenres really in this SUV category. How do you start just kind of narrowing that down?
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of a surprise for us too, quite frankly. I mean, like, we like the Sportage. We've driven it before, and it scored highly enough to be included in this test. But it was we all kind of just got out of it every single time we drove it on a loop. We're like, oh wow, that was just really solidly enjoyable. It was a good drive. And this one was kind of, we did argue a little bit more severely over this one, because you know, Sportage Hybrid is a two-row SUV. It's not going to really be suited to towing a boat or to anything like that, you know. And if you've got a big family, it's not the best choice for that. And so there were people in our group who said that they would rather see, you know, something like the Jeep Grand Wagoneer or the Infiniti QX60 win, something that has a third row seats, maybe some off-road and towing capability. But it kind of just came down to the fact that, like, we thought about the way most people use their SUVs, and this seemed like a better fit for most people, for most, you know, small families, most single people or couples or whatever. This just kind of seemed like a really good do it all SUV.
I was going to say it's worth mentioning.
No. Sorry. With a bunch of people, it always gets interesting. Well, but I just wanted to mention real quick that this category was previously best family car. And then for the first year, all of the vehicles competing in it were SUVs. So we turned it into best SUV. Mm-hmm. So Brett was saying, that these vehicles have to do well for a family.
Yeah. And to Brett's point of sort of like, it's not just going to be a three row. I mean, even though we talked about that, I think the Sportage, for more than anything, this category, it was kind of about numbers. And we definitely drove these cars a lot, and we spent a lot of time in these cars. But when you're looking at the numbers in terms of efficiency, space, things like that, like, the Sportage really ticked more boxes than a lot of small crossovers or a lot of small SUVs. Like, it did so many things well for its segment, even more so than the Honda CR-V, which we also had there. Like, it was hard not to just instantly get in this car and be really impressed with, like, the technology for what you get at that price point, and the leather that's in there. Like, the materials are really nice. The driver's really nice. And I think the handoff between gas and electric was so seamless, like, impressively seamless. Now, I've driven some luxury vehicles lately that, like, the hybrid is so clunky and harsh that you're like, oh my God, this is awful. But you get in this and it's like you barely recognize that you're driving a hybrid a lot of times, because it is so smooth. So I think those were a lot of the big factors But it was tough. I think this was our biggest or second biggest segment. Was luxury more than this, Brett?
I can't remember which was larger, but those were the two that had the most kind of infighting over what was supposed to win. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were eight people in that category. Or eight.
Looks
people,
like there eight, were eight vehicles both.
And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like eight for both. So definitely a big group. Yeah. Do you know what the price point is on the Kia? Because I think that I mentioned it because I think it's a very astute point. SUV, you're talking family vehicle. Jeep Grand Wagoneer looks great. Not going to be accessible to a decent amount of buyers.
Not to mention Range Rover. That's not accessible to a significant number of buyers.
So, I mean, factoring that
or
in.
Or BMW iX for that point.
Right. Well, so, I mean, factoring that in.
To kind of judge these vehicles not based on their price point, because obviously I don't know that you can really make the claim that this was a $40,000 Kia Sportage, by the way, just under 40. It was about 38. And this is fully loaded. Yeah. It's the hybrid. So it's about as expensive as a Sportage can get. So, but it's not totally fair to bring a $40,000 Sportage to an SUV fight that also includes $130,000 worth of Range Rover.
Right.
Because ultimately they're both SUVs with four wheels and an engine that get people where they need to go. Like, you know, it's just not super fair to really take a whole lot of price into consideration. But that said, the Sportage offered an incredible amount of value for that $40,000. It didn't feel, you know, it didn't feel overpriced in the same way that 130 grand for a Range Rover doesn't feel overpriced, because you really feel like you're getting what you're paying for. So, you know, at $40,000, less than $40,000, you're getting a vehicle that has a very refined powertrain with a lot of power. That turbo engine, by the way, is a great companion for the Sportage, more so than the naturally aspirated base engine. So you're getting a lot of power and almost 40 miles per gallon highway. And that fabulous interior that you can see scrolling past that just looks so cool and has such cool detailing and stuff like that. So, you know, pricing is definitely something to consider, but for 40 grand, you're getting a lot of car for your money on this one.
Okay. I know you'd mentioned a little bit about, not conflict, but you know, there are a lot of vehicles in this category. There were some opinions going back and forth. What were some of the other vehicles that were right up there fighting tooth and nail with Kia on this one?
I think we all really like the Genesis GV70. We love driving it. We loved how nice the interior was. The engine was great, but I don't think it really like excelled in any one key area. It was just a really solid luxury compact, but it didn't really like bring as much to the table as the Kia did sort of in its respective class. So
yeah, and I think while I'm looking at the ratings here right now, the Genesis had a 9.6 out of 10 going into the competition. So
and that was kind of the other surprise, is that everyone who hadn't driven a GV70 yet drove it this week and were blown away by how incredible it is to drive. It's so sporty and so composed and dynamic and balanced. It's so much better at going around corners than you'd think a crossover could be. But ultimately it kind of did just come down to the fact that, like, again, going back to that, you know, best SUV, like, needs to do a lot of things, needs to be a lot of things to a lot of people. And maybe some people shopping in that class want something sporty, but I bet a lot of them are more concerned with practicality and efficiency and some of those other features that it kind of just came up a little bit short on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we also, we talked about the Grand Wagoneer a ton. We loved the Grand Wagoneer. QX60 was a huge, someone kind of midway through our conversation on voting, which should get the award. Someone was like, wait, what about QX60? And we all went, oh yeah, that was a really very comfortable, very spacious, like, very well composed vehicle. Like, especially compared to the last QX60, it's incredible. It's so good and so comfortable and so much better at being a luxury car than the old one was. So that was a topic of conversation as well.
I was not the person who brought that up, by the way. I was not a QX60 fan. It's a good SUV, but I didn't think it was award worthy.
Well, I find it a bit interesting. You know, the way that was presented. Hey, what about the QX60? It's like, oh wait, we forgot about that one almost, right? I mean, yeah. Maybe there's a little bit going on there. I think a lot of people just kind of forget about the Infiniti, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that happens. Real quick, I because we have so many categories, I hate to say it, we're 25 minutes into this episode, but we're kind of short on time. But I do have a question that I'm curious about, and that is that the Honda CR-V and the Subaru Forester, we haven't discussed those vehicles at all in this category. And they're also, those are the primary competitors or would be primary competitors amongst our finalists against the Kia Sportage. So what limited the Forester and the CR-V versus the Kia?
CR-V, again, kind of the same issue as the GV70, where it's like, it's really good for its class, but it's not like special or mind-blowing or like excels in any one key area. Like a ton of people are going to buy it and it's going to be definitely a great vehicle for a lot of people, but it's just not like it's not like a standout, right? And then the Wilderness is, we could talk more about Wilderness and value because I think we had a bigger discussion about it there, but it was an interesting SUV. Yeah.
We can talk about more there then. Okay. Cool. Okay. Then let's move on. So this is going to be our best luxury category. And as what you're saying, this is tied for our largest category with mm-hmm. 8 vehicles. So Lucid Air GT, Land Rover Range Rover, Genesis GV70, Genesis G90, BMW iX, Acura Integra, Infiniti QX60, and Jeep Grand Wagoneer were our competitors in that class. And the winner amongst all those, drum roll super quick, the Range Rover.
Range Rover. And this might be a good time to point out to everybody listening or watching, if you're watching, where on Motor One Podcast on YouTube, or if you're listening on Spotify, Apple, Google, I'll get in all the plugs there right now. This would be a good time to point out that vehicles weren't limited to one category in this in this competition.
This year,
with the exception of, I think, there was one category where, or no, all vehicles were pretty much eligible in every category. Correct?
Yeah, unless they didn't fit there, to my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah. If it fit in the category, it was included in the category. I think just one exception, but yeah, no, it was a really great way to do it because last year we had categories that had two cars in them and we were choosing between one or the other. So this was great because we could kind of keep the overall number to a manageable level, but consider vehicles that had like a wider variety of abilities and talents. So
sure. And that's a real world way of thinking about it too, because somebody that's shopping for a vehicle, they're not going to necessarily discount one because, oh, well, we looked at it yesterday, you know, today's a different day. We can't include that one. So, I mean, yeah, it all works out there. So Range Rover, definitely luxurious. What made this one stand out from the rest of the luxury field?
Luxury was another tough one. I mean, all the cars that we brought in are really, really good. And I think the Range Rover, it doesn't look that different than it did last year. It doesn't really even drive that different or feel that different inside, but the changes that they made, like they perfected what they had already perfected, basically, right? Because the Range Rover has been such an icon in terms of luxury for so long, and they just kind of turned the dial up to 11 a little bit. Like, it is so good to drive. And I think the inline six engine that we had, I'm trying to think of the horsepower off the top of my head, and I can't, but it was
394. 395.
Look at Brad. Bam, right there.
Man, that engine is so good. Like, so smooth and so powerful and so torquey. Like, I just, that's one of the ones that I found myself jumping into a lot and just wanting to go drive and sit in. And yeah, it was really good.
And it just kind of like gets this, you know, it's not really, there's the Range Rover Sport if you want something that has some kind of like on-road sporty pretensions. There's that vehicle. But this is just purely hedonism. This is just going, like, you know, going around corners kind of slowly, quite frankly. You couldn't like chuck it into a corner, but you just kind of just wafted your way down the road. It was great. Everything about it was wonderful. The touch points are all phenomenal. The like metallic switches feel great. There's plenty of leather all over the place. And, you know, comparatively, like, this car had a $130,000 price, which is a lot of money, right? But it's not hard to get an S-Class Mercedes well over 130 grand. It's not even hard. This was even kind of lightly optioned for a Range Rover. It only had about $20,000 worth of options. So, you know, it really was just kind of a brilliant piece of machinery. It felt so good every time you got in it. Like Jeff said, it just felt so nice.
Yeah. So speaking of that six-figure plus price, the Lucid Air GT definitely ticks that box. And, you know, depending on how you option it, the BMW iX does as well. Why the Range Rover over an Air GT or a BMW iX?
That's a good question. I mean...
okay. Tell me why. You drove them.
I think the iX... Man, the iX was so hard to like, because I think it competed in three categories. It was luxury, EV, and SUV. And in each category, for whatever reason, it just like slipped our mind every time that we're like, oh yeah, the iX, we should talk about that one.
I thought that was the Infiniti's job.
Yeah, well, the Infiniti did that too. But the iX is weird because it genuinely has one of the nicest interiors, I think, of any of the cars in this group. Like, BMW did such a good job with the interior of that car. The styling is hit or miss. I think
miss.
Maybe like, yeah, I think the majority of us would say miss, although I kind of like it. And the drive is good, but it's not like amazing. So the BMW really kind of fell to the middle of the pack in sort of every category, which is unfortunate because I really do like that car. And then what was the other one you asked?
The Lucid. Air GT, yes. Because it was up for best EV, best performance, and best luxury, and it didn't win any of those classes. So
Spoilers! Kind of come on, man!
Yeah, spoiler alert. What?
And that's not to besmirch the Lucid in any respect, because, you know, it was so, so fast, and so, it just felt very cool. It was a very cool vehicle to drive around in. The interior was lovely. Like the feature, the materials and the styling of the design of the cabin is really nice. We had a hard time falling in love with the like fully digital, fully like it's like a totally glass cockpit. So everything that you interact with is on a screen. And we had a hard time with that. We had a kind of a hard time getting used to the like proportions of the thing. It has a very low roofline and very narrow doors. And so getting in and out, you bonk your head every time. And then the fully glass, the roof is fully glass over to like the B pillar. Spite of that, it felt claustrophobic because it's just kind of an interesting something about the way the roof pillars or something like that is designed. It just feels a little tight and claustrophobic. So there were a few things that kind of just prevented us from like really, really falling head over heels with it. That said, our last charge time that we needed, we had a very busy day that day and had a lot more stuff to get done. And so I volunteered to drive it all the way back down into the city and charge it. And in that like 2 hours that I spent with it, I felt a lot more in love with it than I think I had previously. So we got to give it some credit there. But ultimately, you know, there was just kind of this like friction on all of these vehicles that we were considering for this Star Award. There was just like a little bit of friction, something that kind of just like held us up. And the Range Rover was the only one that just was like, get in, get comfortable, and go for a drive. Like, it was just very easy to just kind of like get cozy in and have a great time with. All the others kind of had some little niggle that we just couldn't get over.
I think that's fair. I think that's, you know, true of every vehicle. There's no such thing as a perfect car. No car does absolutely everything well. So, yeah, sure. I think that's, you know, you're going to find that kind of that friction point with every vehicle. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting argument. But let's move on. Let's move to best value. And so here were the competitors in that category. The Honda Civic Si, the Acura Integra, the Kia Sportage, the Ford Maverick Hybrid, the Honda CR-V, and the Subaru Forester Wilderness. And the winner of that category was the Ford Maverick.
Oh, look at Bruce going with a little fake. Almost had us in the first half, not going to lie.
I was looking at one word and reading another word. No.
It is the Ford Maverick Hybrid.
It was the Ford Maverick. I apologize. I'm reading a list and I apologize, folks.
And before we get into that decision, I want to just highlight that Acura Integra was in best value and best luxury. And I think that's extraordinary. And I think I mean, I agree with the both of you that it deserved to be in both categories. It didn't win either, but I mean, just talk a little bit about that dichotomy of the Integra being in best value and in best luxury. Because I know that topic had to come up. That discussion had to happen.
The Integra in best luxury kind of didn't stand a chance, to be totally honest. I think there was a slight like hope that maybe we'll get in and we'll drive it and we'll be like, oh, this is a great luxury car for, you know, $35,000 or whatever it was as tested. But ironically, value was one of the hottest arguments that we had all week, and the Integra was the biggest argument, because I think when it came down to it, we're trying to figure out, I mean, the Maverick is obviously great value, we all know that, but there's certain things that are like, you know, you could argue that a subcompact crossover would be a better deal than a Maverick, right? The Integra is a luxury performance hatchback with a manual transmission that you can get for theoretically under 35 grand. Like, there aren't a lot of cars out there that do that anymore. You can't get that on an A3 for the most part. You can't get, you know, a small BMW like that. So there was a strong push for the Integra, but I think ultimately the fact that it was competing in both luxury and value, and that it could be, you know, a luxury vehicle, kind of doomed it a little bit there. So
interesting.
If you want some inside baseball, the hardest argument that we had the entire week was between the Integra and the Maverick. And nice. And it just like,
we want inside baseball.
Yeah, it was exactly like Jeff said. If you spec a Mercedes-Benz CLA or an Audi A3 to the levels that the Integra has right out of the box, you're at $40,000 or $45,000. And so if you want a good value in a luxury car, it was absolutely the Integra. And combined with the fact that, like, we all loved driving it, it has a perfect shifter. It's so fun to drive on a twisty road. It was just like a really enjoyable car to just kind of like, I feel like it'd be a really enjoyable daily driver for a lot of reasons. The Maverick ultimately, like, we came down on the Maverick because for $25,000 or $26,000 as tested, you're getting 42 miles per gallon city and a bed that you can hose out with a garden hose if you need to throw some muddy stuff in it. And so it kind of does this really weird compact crossover thing with some of the benefit of also being a pickup truck. So it kind of felt like a zero compromises vehicle. The back seat's a little bit small. It's definitely smaller than you'll get in like a Honda CR-V, but, you know, in most other respects, it has all the economy, all the efficiency, all the drivability of a small SUV with some of that, you know, some of that cargo hauling flexibility. So,
yeah.
Crickets.
It was like a hard conversation. It was the only time that I feel like Seth wanted to punch me in the face was when we were discussing.
Whoa, okay.
I mean, the only time I get that, like every other day.
It was so funny. We don't need to talk about ballots or anything like that, but Seth was having a hard time voting for the Maverick until the other option that we all kind of came around was the Integra. And he was like, I feel like you Machiavelli'd me into voting for the Maverick. And it wasn't my intent, but I was still happy to see the Maverick.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say too, because we touched on the Subaru Forester for a little bit in SUV, but I wanted to bring it back around in value because I love that thing. Like I was rooting for that from the beginning, the Forester Wilderness, and for 35 grand basically is you get one of the most capable small crossovers. It looks awesome. It has a great interior. It has good technology. Like, there was a big push for the Forester Wilderness there for a minute as far as best value goes, because it is just such an interesting vehicle for 35 grand that I think maybe you could argue Bronco Sport is a good competitor. But other than that, I don't really see anything at that price point that's as capable or as cool. So Forester Wilderness was like a third option to those two, but it was an interesting argument there for a while.
Well, I would have loved to have been out there for that. It's like, how do you decide? Because there are outstanding arguments for the Integra and there are outstanding arguments for the Maverick. I mean, I can imagine that being a little contentious.
Yeah.
Again, it was just a matter of priorities for sure. Like, you know, there were people who, you know, some of the editors who were voting never haul muddy cargo, never need to worry about, you know, the flexibility of an open bed. And for them, a Maverick doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, like it's a really long, it's deceptively large. It's as long as a Ford Explorer. So mm-hmm. like, you know, like there's some shortcomings for sure that come along with its form factor. And then there were others who were like, yeah, an Integra is great. A Wilderness is great, but you know, they don't fit the flexibility. They don't like fit the lifestyle, you know, like, so it was a hard conversation for sure. Like it was the most arguing we did the entire week was over this category, and it was down to those three cars. So,
well, and here's how I know you were right. And this is going to sound terrifically arrogant, but I don't really mean it that way.
Okay.
I would have chosen the Maverick, and I would have chosen the Maverick. I say that not arrogance. I am not a truck guy, but the fact that I really like the Maverick, and I think there are a lot of people out there like me. They want something still smallish, affordable, but capable. They're not interested in a manual transmission. I mean, I am, but I think there are far more buyers that would look to the Maverick to solve all of their problems and be kind of neat in the process. I think it's catching the eye of a lot of people. That's why Ford's doing such a good job, you know, getting them off lots. So that's my theory on Maverick. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, part of our argument was even like, to your point, like you can go buy a Nissan Versa or you can go buy a Ford Maverick, right? And it's, you're getting a compact SUV basically with a bed. You can put a tonneau cover over there and put stuff back there. Like it does depend a little bit on lifestyle, but it's a really interesting alternative to some of the more boring stuff out there, like the sedans and small crossovers. So
nailed it.
No, yeah, for sure. Very good. For sure. Let's move on because I know we're getting a little bit long. What's next on our list? Performance, Bruce?
Best performance. And so the contestants there are Lucid Air GT, Honda Civic Si, Audi RS3, Cadillac CT5V Blackwing, and the Hyundai Elantra N. And the winner is the Audi RS3.
So. Very, very interesting choice here. Again, such an eclectic lineup. Lucid Air Grand Touring, a hard-hitting EV, Elantra N, a front-wheel drive compact sedan.
The Civic Si, which is an affordable kind of, you know, entry-level performance. And like you said, Smith, the Lucid Air GT, which is on a complete other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I love the variation here in the choices.
And we didn't intend to do this, but the RS3 pretty conveniently sits at the median of like both price and power and overall performance. Like if you look at everything on like a scatter plot, the RS3 mm-hmm. is like right in the middle of everything, which I don't think was intentional, but it kind of just speaks to how very well balanced and very, you know, it does a good job of being like a relatively, you know, relatively affordable, very fast, very fun to drive vehicle.
Yeah, we should say too that we did drive them all on the track together. We rented out, was it Streets of Willow Springs for the day? And we took all these cars out there to the track. We did 0-60 testing. We did hot laps. So we really put them to the test. And for me, I walked away from the track because we also drove them on the road the next day. I walked away from the track with the RS3 and the Elantra N being my top two with no clear winner, or with no clear, like, I didn't know which one I would rather take home. I think the Civic Si was interesting. It's an interesting on-road performance car. It didn't do as well on the track. I think part of that had to do with the fact that it's way down on power compared to everything else that was there, essentially. And it was just a little, you know, less dynamic than Elantra, maybe. And then Lucid was crazy. That is a very fast car. It has shortcomings elsewhere. Like I think the handling is imperfect, and you can't turn off the regenerative braking, which makes it kind of hard to figure out on the track. But there was a point on that track, I think the back straight, that turned into like a little kink back there. I could not put my foot flat to the floor with that car because it was so scary going into that turn. It was so insanely fast. So that was really cool for the Lucid. But at the end of the day, for me, it was Audi and Elantra that kind of came out on top.
One quick story about the Lucid. So we were doing, we did acceleration and braking testing on all the cars this year, on all the performance cars and the EVs this year. So one quick, we didn't have a prep surface, but we had a flat stretch of the front straight at Willow Springs. And we were using that to go up to 60 and then from 60 down to zero. And so with the Lucid, with most of the cars, that process took, you know, half to three quarters of the track length of the space that we had available. And with the Lucid, we launched the Lucid on one end and came to a stop like closer than halfway down the track. So much so that when the car came to a stop, Seth was standing over in the pit lane, and I rolled down the window and I had like a what the F just happened face because it was such an insanely quick vehicle. And he came over and he's like, "What happened? Something went wrong." And I was like, "No, it just did the thing." And he's like, "In that space?" Like, "Yeah, it just did. That's
it just did,
It just did the thing." And like, it was just the funniest. Like, the numbers tell one story. Like, putting it like in the real world and being like, "What took the Civic this long took the Lucid this long," and that was just hysterical. So yeah. That was a wonderful. That was probably like the best performance experience that I had, was that like 2.8 seconds to 60 or whatever it was. It was just insane.
Let me ask you about the CT5V Blackwing, because I know there are some that really like it, some that just really don't. And I know there are a lot of listeners. I mean, it's, you know, big V8 rear wheel drive sedan. How did that kind of just slot into this lineup here? Was it ever on your mind as maybe a serious contender driving all of these other vehicles? Do you think?
I'll say that I'm in the camp that doesn't love that car. And I know that sounds crazy because it is a rear wheel drive supercharged V8, like manual car. To me, it just feels so unattainable. Like, there's so much performance there to give. And you really have to know what you're doing in that car to really make the most out of it. And maybe that speaks to me more as a driver than anything, but it's just too much. There's a lot going on. I think Seth spent a lot of time in that car. He maybe spent the most time in that car out of all of us because he wanted to figure that damn thing out on the track. Like, he really wanted to get it right. And to me, if you have to do that, that's not a car that maybe 75% of normal people should be driving on the road, right? You get in the Elantra N, you get in the RS3, you go around, you have a great time. You don't need to think too hard. It's awesome. You get in the CT5, and if you really mess something up, you're in a bad spot. So that was hard for me. And then I think even on the road, you're doing something as simple as just turning out of our gravel driveway onto the pavement. It just wants to spin the tires. Like, it just wants to go crazy all the time. And that was a hard car for me to really like, although I think I'm probably in the minority there.
So no, I understand what you mean.
This was Jeff's and my greatest contention over the week, was because I actually, in that exact same car, like 3 or 4 months ago, our former director of video, Clint Simone, and I did a Blackwing comparison with the CT4 and the CT5. And they dropped the CT5 at my house first, and I was terrified of the thing for a day. And then, you know, after, you know, a few very gentle miles, it became like much, definitely not easy to drive, but much less intimidating than it had been previously. And so I really kind of think that it, like, for a 600 plus horsepower rear wheel drive manual transmission vehicle, I think it's actually like pretty docile. And that is like a very big qualifier. Of course, it's going to be much more of a handful than the 200 horsepower front drive Civic Si. But I like, that was the one that I just like really, that was the one that like pulled my heart the hardest for sure. And in every way that the RS3 is, like, it's an incredible performer and it goes so incredibly fast and it flatters you in every way. Like, it's a very enjoyable vehicle to just jump in and drive quickly. The CT5 is kind of the opposite. It's not particularly flattering. If you screw up, it will let you know. It's not super easy to drive really quickly, but it's so involving and so thrilling in a way that like I really found appealing. I just like, I fell in love with that car all over again, 100% when we drove that. But that's not to besmirch the fact that the RS3 was an incredibly like hilarious, fun vehicle to drift around the corners. Like, it was just so controllable and so enjoyable.
The discussions that you're both having, the arguments on both sides, I understand completely, because I remember, well, gosh, it was probably 10 or 12 years ago or so in another life when I was doing some flip this car stuff at Winding Road. I had my Fox Body Mustang 5-liter that I bought for a winter car, and I put snow tires on it to drive it through winter. And Jeff, to your point, 10 or 12 years ago, I might have been on Camp Brett saying, oh yeah, the CT5V, it requires more. You have to be more involved. You have to be more invested. And it's like, yeah, every person should do that. Cause I felt that way about that Mustang 10 or 12 years ago. Yeah, I could drive it in the snow. Am I just gonna like set the cruise and go to sleep? Hell no, because I would be dead. But if you spent the time and got to just really, it's like it was the challenge of driving. And now, 10 years later, I wouldn't want that challenge. I have snow tires on my Mustang, but it's not a daily driver. I'll go out and spin it around the block and then just put it back in the garage and take the Subaru.
See, I like Toyota Avalons. I don't like cars that make me think too hard or make me feel like I'm going to, crash.
Oh, RIP Avalon. I'm pouring one out here right now. No, that's very interesting points. Very interesting points. And I think a lot of ramblers out there can understand both sides. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be interested in that kind of investment for just a daily driver, you know?
Yeah.
So if I could ask you guys to address this quickly, because, you know, just for time constraints, where do you come down on evaluating a performance car on track versus on the road? Because what, 90, 95, 98% of the time someone is actually driving a vehicle, it's going to be on the road. It's not going to be on the track. So how do you split that up in your mind and decide this is the best performance car because maybe it's an A++ on the track, it's a B+ on the road, versus another vehicle that's maybe an A+ when you're driving it every day versus, you know, maybe it's not the greatest track car in the world?
So that right there is why the RS3 won, is because not only was it brilliant on the track, it was also very, very good to drive on the road, and it had a very comfortable interior, and it didn't really require a whole lot of sacrifice. I will absolutely concede that the CT5 was a much more difficult vehicle to drive around town because it's just the stick shift. First of all, I love stick shift, but there's no denying that it's hard to drive a stick around town, but it's also kind of like firm and stiff, and the seats are way too confining and everything like that. The RS3, on the other hand, was just like, it was a A3 at the end of the day. It was so comfortable and so easy to drive while also being blindingly fast. So like the way you describe it is exactly why the RS3 won, is because it didn't require that many sacrifices to be a really good track car.
Yeah, and it had a 5-cylinder. So that's basically all you need to know.
Okay. You're not wrong.
Okay. Well, then let's go to Best EV, which has some familiar vehicles that we've been talking about today. The Lucid Air GT, the GMC Hummer EV, the Ford F-150 Lightning, the BMW iX, and the Hyundai IONIQ 5. The winner of that group was the Ford Lightning.
Lightning. Ta-da. Taking a second one.
Only vehicle to win two awards.
Yeah,
that was an interesting one too. I mean, again, the iX just like fell to the middle of the pack for iX. The Hummer was like a very niche thing. The Lucid made some interesting, like it had some really compelling arguments, especially with like charge time and charge rate and things like that. But I mean,
what in your mind is the difference between charge time and charge rate?
Not much. It's just the rate of 350 kilowatts, Brett?
Okay. Yeah, rate. that's the charging capacity versus how long it actually. Okay, cool.
Lucid has the highest charge rate of any car on sale right now, unless I'm missing one. Which means, you know, you can go to a supercharger and charge it 350 kilowatts theoretically, because
right,
that's always a challenge, and be done faster than everybody else. The Lightning doesn't, but it also just does a lot of other things better than the Lucid, as far as just feeling more livable, offering more capability, in part because it's a truck, but also in part because it is just a more normal vehicle. And it was just good. We really, really loved the Lightning. So it was hard not to give it the award there.
There's something of like a political play going on, quite frankly, is because EVs are the future. Like, the writing is on the wall. We are on our way to a fully electric future.
Definitely. And I agree with that.
And vehicles like last year's Porsche Taycan, which took home the Editor's Choice Award, were kind of like, those are EVs that stir the soul. Those are like EVs that make us excited to drive. And then vehicles like the Ford F-150 Lightning are EVs that are just easy to drive. Like, they just, you just don't have to think about it. You get in, you drive it like any other F-150, which is the best-selling vehicle on the planet, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so if you can convince that many people to make the switch to electric vehicles, the Ford F-150 Lightning has the potential to like change the landscape of the auto industry the most. And so it was kind of just came down to the fact that like, we weren't just like being cynical and just like being like, oh, the F-150 gets it because it's a bestseller. It was literally like, this is a vehicle that drives very well. It's very comfortable, very easy to live with on a day-to-day basis, and also happens to just kind of take the form factor of, you know, one of the most popular cars on the planet. So
it's not shouting, hey, look, I'm an EV.
Yeah.
It's shouting, look, I'm an F-150.
And we for this category specifically, we took a lot of insight from our friend at Inside EVs, Tom Malogny. And he said specifically that, like, in his experience with the F-150 and all the other EVs that were in this category, the F-150 was the one that was most consistent. You know, it hit that peak charge rate more consistently and more like just about every mm-hmm. time that he charged it. So he knew if he plugged it in with such a charge and left it charging for 25 minutes, he'd have this much at the end of that charge session. Which he said was really important to him as a when he was out doing like road trip things. He knew exactly what to expect every time. And then on top of that, like, his friends said they would come over and look at the Lightning and be like, oh, this actually might be my next vehicle because it's everything that I love about my F-150 with the added bonus of being, you know, fully electric and having all that low-end torque and everything like that.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Smith, because I've got a big question to ask. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's say it's an astute point. And Tom Malogny's been on our show before.
One of the most
knowledgeable person on that you're going to find regarding electric vehicles. The consistency in the charging, that's something that people really not deep into the EV world, probably you don't even know about it or understand it. Just because a vehicle can charge at a certain rate doesn't always mean that it does. So having that kind of consistency that you can rely on, that you can count on, is an important factor. I'm very glad, Brett, that you mentioned that you brought it up, because that goes into this part of being best EV is just doing the things that you need it to do when you need to do it without surprises, right? Now, Bruce, I yield the rest of my time to the distinguished gentleman from Ohio.
Thank you. Well, I've got a very, very big question, and that comes down to your guys' editor's choice pick. And the editor's choice was the Hyundai IONIQ 5, which you will know, I just said, was amongst the contestants for the best EV. Mm-hmm. And the Ford F-150 Lightning won not just best truck and best EV. So why is the Hyundai IONIQ 5 your editor's choice as an electric vehicle, but it's not the best electric vehicle?
It's interesting because
yes,
the IONIQ 5 was maybe our second choice for best EV. And the Lightning was maybe our second choice for editor's choice or something like that. I think they were both two or three. We talked to Tom about best EV and the Lightning with the charging consistency stuff and just the general livability. Like, it made more sense to us as an EV, as best EV. But then the IONIQ when you drive it, first of all, the styling's amazing, right? Like, it is very much a shouty, interesting, like, look at me, I'm an EV, like the 8-bit taillights and the really boxy design. Like, it is less of a, like an everyday just car. Like, it's very much trying to tell you that it's an EV. The drive is really great. I really loved how that vehicle drove. Brett's point to the Lucid feeling kind of claustrophobic and kind of weird. Like, I really didn't like driving that car at night. And then I jumped in the Ioniq and I was like, oh man, this is great. This is so comfortable. The visibility is amazing. There's so much space in here because of the flat floor. Like, it just really spoke to us in a way that some of the other cars maybe didn't to that level. And I think that was really why, I mean, this was another big argument though. I don't think we had a really good consensus on this for a long time. But in the end, I think we all agreed that Ioniq 5 was the right choice. So,
yeah, it kind of came down to personal preference on the editor's choice. This is a very wide open category. We don't have mm-hmm. like very specific parameters. It's kind of just like, if you were given a 2-year lease on one of these vehicles, which one would you take? And a lot of us just kind of was like, the Ioniq 5 is just a really good fit for the lifestyles that we lead. And so, of course, your mileage may vary. Like, if you're the kind of person who does need truck capability, and F-150 Lightning is going to be better. My top pick for our editor's choice was the Acura Integra because it has so much cargo room and it's so fun to drive and it's got a manual transmission. And these are all things that are pretty important to me. So it kind of just came down to like these like very like not terribly well-defined personal preferences. And so Ioniq 5 kind of just ticked all of the boxes for all of us. I don't think any of us, Chris, you can, Smith, you can probably tell us because you counted the ballots. But when we voted for editor's choice, we were given, you know, a certain number of lots to cast and we could cast them anywhere we wanted. Mm-hmm. And so I think you probably will corroborate that every single one of us had the Ioniq 5 somewhere on our ballot list. You know, like, I don't think any one of us turned up our noses at the idea of the Ioniq 5. And so by just being like consistently solid, consistently enjoyable, like that makes it a really, really exceptional daily driver. For those of us who are voting and for a lot of people, you know, just being able to do family things really well, do EV things really well, do daily driving really well. It was really fast, like way faster than you'd expect it to be, faster than the Elantra 5 for that matter, you know, so Elantra N. So, you know, it really kind of just was like a really solid competitor in every single respect.
No, I do have a little bit of inside baseball there because I was the one tasked with gathering and then charting these secret ballots because the whole point was, okay, none of the editors should influence each other. So you have your points that you can allocate however you like, but there's not going to be any sort of cross-contamination, if you will. So we set up this doc. All of the votes came to me. Nobody knew what the other person was voting. I plugged everything in and there was a tie. So we went back. Okay, we have a tie. Now we need to do like a runoff. There was a second tie. This was a process. And the Ioniq 5 was always right there. I'll tell you what. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. If I'm going to get in trouble, I might as well get in trouble. The CT5V Blackwing was right there. It was tied. I have the chart pulled up right now. The Elantra N was right there in the running. The Integra was right there. The GV70 was right there. So, I mean, yeah, getting everything all narrowed down. I mean, poor Seth, because I'm picking Seth, you know, to let him know, okay, here's where we are for the results. And it's like, we're tied. He's like, damn it, I didn't think of that. So, okay, now, yeah. So we go back. Okay, now we got it. We're still tied. Damn it. So, I mean, it was a very thorough process. It was a very involved process. And it was also a very informed process.
Politically correct way of wrapping all that up. It's just to say that like every single car in our test, even the ones that we like forgot about or like overlooked or whatever.
Nobody voted for the Infiniti QX60.
Ultimately, it was still a really good competitor. It's like every single car that we had invited to our Star Awards gave us all something to think about at one point or another. And
right,
and just like it was just they were just all they're all so good, and that speaks to our editorial prowess, obviously. But it also speaks to the fact that like cars today are just so good. Like it's kind of hard to go wrong. You can definitely do better with some choices than others, but ultimately they're all just really, really good. Like it was a great crop of competitors this year, and we all had a like heck of a time figuring out which ones we liked the best.
Yeah. I'll also say too, I mean, at this point it's cliche to say that Hyundai and Kia are doing a great job building cars. They've been doing a great job for, you know, half a decade now. But almost every car that was at the top of Editor's Choice was a Hyundai, a Kia, a Genesis. Like, we just, those cars are just so good. And Ioniq 5 and Elantra N and GV70 especially, like, it's so hard, and Sportage, obviously, which one best SUV. Like, it's so hard to discount any of those cars because they bring so much to the table. And I think it's just a testament to what that company is doing right now. So.
Yeah, no, I think, I would love to drive the Ioniq 5. I would also love to sample the Kia, the EV6. I know, Jeff, you said that they've been building great cars for half a century. Did you ever drive a Kia?
Half a century? Kia? No. He said 5 years.
Did you ever drive a Kia Sophia?
No, I should though. I feel like I should go back in time and find an old one and just see what it's like.
Nope. I drove one. It had to have been like 97 or 98. And I was like, I thought it was in a hailstorm because I was driving. It was back in my, I was working for a used car dealer. And I thought it was in a hailstorm because, it was storm clouds. It was Kalamazoo. It was like summer storm clouds, rain's coming down. The way everything was just hitting the car, I was like, damn, there must be some big hail out here. I get to the dealership and I open the door and it's like, oh, it's just sort of a light shower. it just sounded, it's just like, my God, it was just made of tin. But
my driver's ed car was either a Daewoo Nubira or a Kia Sophia, and
they've come a long way from the Sophia.
Yeah, they've done great. Yeah.
They've done great. Well, I mean, Motor One Star Awards. Everybody, Ramblers, wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Google Audio, whether you're on Motor One Podcast, where you should go like, subscribe, follow, tell your friends, tell everybody to like, follow, subscribe everywhere. Go to MotorOne.com because these guys did a hell of a lot of work putting Star Awards together. This is months and months and months. And there will always be people, oh, what are these guys talking about? Sorry, you drove like three cars in the last 10 years. They drove 150 in like 2 months, okay? MotorOne.com, we have all of the Star Awards articles up there that talk a lot more about these individual winners. You'll definitely want to go check it out. Jeff, Brett, I mean, your thoughts now that this process is over, and I know, I mean, for the week that you guys were in California, I mean, that was like 13-hour days, right?
Yeah. Very early days. Terrible weather, surprisingly. It was freezing. It was raining. There was frost on the cars two mornings. Like, but we did it. We figured it out. We drove a lot of cars, and I think we're happy with how the testing turned out this year.
Good.
And I'd love to say that we now get to coast for a little while, but we're right back at it planning next year's Star Awards in January. So
we have
a little bit more to look forward to in a few months for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, fantastic.
Is there anything you want to promote personally? Anything you've done that you're super proud of that you want to, you know, to tell listeners?
Yeah. What's the latest and the greatest from Jeff and Brett?
Well, follow Motor One on Instagram, on TikTok. We really want to boost the TikTok next year. Like, that's a big project for me. And just make sure to follow us on social media. So
yeah, all right, Brett, how about you?
Social media is a good one. If you if you're a YouTuber, as I'm sure all of you are, since you're watching Rambling About Cars on the Motor One Podcast YouTube channel, the Motor One YouTube channel is also a great source of entertainment and information. We're doing a lot of really cool stuff there with some first drives. My personal favorite of the year, I think, was probably the 911 Carrera T, which just went live a couple of weeks ago. So go be sure to give that a watch and let me know what you think, if I'm a total moron or if I've got it on the money. You know, all comments pay the same, so it doesn't matter whether it's hate mail or whether it's a hate watch or a love watch, it still pays the same. So
that's right.
And if you have any opinions on this podcast, where can they send email, everybody? Come on, I can hear it out there.
Podcast@motorone.com is our email
address. Podcast@motorone.com. And comment on our articles. Comment on the YouTube video that goes up. Obviously, we didn't have any time for comments this week. We do have some comments. We do have some emails that we're going to get to.
We do. So, Smith, perfect segue. We will not be doing any comments next week either, because technically, Smith, you and I are recording next week's podcast as folks are listening to this
tomorrow.
You and I are recording it tomorrow. And I am going to go ahead and tell people who the guests are, because at this point, I don't think they can pull out. So we have Myron Vernis, who is a previous guest on the show, and Mark Brinker, and they wrote a 4-volume book about Japanese cars. And I'm looking at it. It literally, and I'm not joking here, it weighs 35 to 40 pounds.
It is amazing. And of course, Myron was on the show prior. You know, he has one of the most amazing car collections you're ever going to see. We can't wait to talk to these guys.
Yeah, it is a 4-volume set going through various Japanese automakers. And Smith, you and I will be recording that tomorrow. The folks, you will be hearing that next week, basically a week from when this episode comes out. We're looking forward to that. So, yeah, just fun stuff going on here. And then, Smith, you and I have to talk about what we're going to do for our Christmas episode. We reached our 400 subscriber goal, so I have a sinking suspicion it's going to involve doing shots of hot sauce.
Yeah, I already committed to that. I've been saving the Los Calientes for the hot sauce.
So for any of our longtime fans, there's some fun coming on the way, and then
what should we do for 500? What should we do for 1,000? Let us know. Podcast@motorone.com. We have no shame.
Yep.
We have no shame.
But and then when the new year comes, we enter into our third year of doing the show. So, you know, just the fun keeps on rolling. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Brett. Thanks for joining us. We super appreciate it. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners. I am going to come up with a better sign off in the new year. I promise you that. I've said it before.
You can't. You have to stick to that. That is your sign off now.
No, I've done it for 2 years and I'm getting tired of it. And I feel like it's cliche and dumb. And I got to come up with something better. And for the new year, I'm going to come up with something better. Yeah, it's just bad. But anyway,
the deep cut that separates the posers from the fans.
Wow. I don't know. There's some pressure there, Bruce.
He's right. Okay. But we're going to call this one. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.